they're moving aerial tankers from the United States to Europe, then from Europe to
Yep.
Qatar, and the same
Just
sort
like
of move.
they did before the last attack.
Yeah. What is that? Do you think? Are we gonna? How close are we to the war between the two, the United States?
Bibi, you probably know this. Bibi went back to Israel, and after telling Donald Trump that everything was copacetic with the ceasefire deal and the ultimate end of the war in Gaza, went back in Hebrew and told everybody, no such thing. The war's going on. The IDF's going to kill them all. We're going to finish the war. So that duplicitous lying sack of proverbial horse is doing it again. Why? Because he knows what's coming. He knows what's coming. He's not going to have to talk to Donald Trump. He's not going to have to apologize. He's not going to have to get down on bended knee. He wouldn't anyway. He kept his coalition together, which he probably wouldn't have done had he come back and said what he said to Trump about agreeing. And he knows he's going to war with Iran. And he knows the United States is going to follow him. That's going to obviate, that's going to cancel everything he said or promised to Trump. So he doesn't care. We're going to war, Nima. We're going to war with Iran again.
What would be the benefit of the new war? What is the main objective, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, and overriding everything else, is preservation of Bibi Netanyahu's coalition and Bibi Netanyahu, period, his power and his position. That's the first objective. The second objective is to keep the United States from causing him to have to do something he doesn't want to do with respect to Gaza, Syria, Lebanon, and elsewhere, I fear. I'm hearing from contacts in Baghdad, for example, that they're getting ready to go to war as well. I'm hearing that Egypt might be on the war path also. I'm hearing that remnants of the forces in Lebanon, which mostly are Hezbollah, are ready to go. I'm hearing there are elements elsewhere in the region that might enter the fray with air power. Think Saudi Arabia, think Qatar, for example. So, and I'm also hearing, and this is very disturbing, and I don't know exactly how to take it, but I'm hearing from people who met with Pezeshkian, the president, and met with other Iranians in New York, not only that they have changed the fatwa from one that bans nuclear weapons to one that bans the use of nuclear weapons, which sort of clears the way for them to go ahead and build one if they haven't already. And I'm also hearing that they're not going to just attack Israel. They're going to attack other assets in the region. And that's the way it was put to me. And I asked the question, do you mean Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait? What? No. I mean U.S. facilities in those countries. So they're going to attack the U.S. outright. Yes. Is that meant to be a deterrent? Is it meant to be a bluff? I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they've had it, if they're fed up with this, and if Israel does commence the war again in a serious way, that it's all over for Israel, plus they will do the damage that they can to the United States facilities in the region. And they could do a lot of damage, a hell of a lot of damage. That they could sink an aircraft carrier if it were in range of one of their high-velocity missiles or a spread of those missiles is, I would say, 60 to 70% a possibility. And then we're off to the races, Nima. I mean, we're off to a regional war. One wonders what Russia and China will do if this starts in that flagrant, overwhelming way. What will they do?
So, what's this story of peace plan? What is he trying to get by the peace plan? Is that a some sort of cover for what they're doing behind the scenes?
The one Bibi allegedly signed up to. Well, I
Yeah.
think that's ultimately Tony Blair. That's essentially Tony Blair running some sort of consortium that will make Gaza, into the thing Trump wants to make it into. a huge enterprise that will make money and so forth and so on. And maybe it has a patina of a potential for a dual state eventually in order to satisfy the members of the Abraham's Accord and get them back into it. I don't think it's going to work. And I know it's not going to work with what Bibi went back and said in Hebrew, which was, I didn't mean any of that. We are going to continue this war. We're going to continue it until Hamas is exterminated. The hostages be damned. He didn't say that, but that's essentially what was implied. And I know I'm safe, at least for the interim, because I'm going to war with Iran and the United States will have no choice but to come in with me.
Larry, maybe I'm so much pessimist about what Donald Trump is doing, but it seems to me that Donald Trump has came out by this sort of plan. He has come out by this plan because of Netanyahu's position in Israel. Because those people who are forcing, putting a lot of pressure on Netanyahu and his administration about the hostages.
Right.
And they're trying to tell those people, so we are trying to do everything. Look at Donald Trump. He put out a peace plan. They're not going to sign for it.
No.
We have to continue the conflict. You know, they're somehow legitimizing what Netanyahu is doing in...
I think Netanyahu wrote the hostages off a long time ago. I really do. I don't think he gives a damn about them. And he doesn't give a damn about them because he feels like they're an impediment to his finishing the job, as it were.
Yeah. After all, Larry, if something... You've mentioned Iran would attack the U.S. bases in the Middle East, but isn't that somehow strange? That do you think that Turkey knows what's going on? Do they really care about what's going on in the Middle East? What is the role of Turkey?
Turkey is a NATO member, the staunch anchor of the southern flank of NATO, which is not saying much today because NATO is falling apart. I think Erdogan, given his previous performance and all this debacle that's happening around him, would just sit there and watch. I don't think he's going to. Now, were Israel to start to topple, seriously topple, fall into chaos, Jews going everywhere, I mean, that's what you're going to have. I found out the other day, Nima, that over 1.5 million Jews have already left Israel. 1.5 million. With all the strictures that Netanyahu has put on travel, still, 1.5 million have had enough money or enough connection to get out. In that event, if it were completely collapsing and it weren't nuclear, Erdogan might move. But that's the only way that guy will move.
Do you, when it comes to the defense treaty between Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, is it going to...
Good question. Ask it.
How is that going to play out?
Very good question, because I think that's probably signed in blood. And it's probably signed in blood, not necessarily with the civilian leadership, but with the ISI and the Pakistani military. And in particular, with that portion of both that more or less looks over nuclear weapons. And that means that Saudi Arabia has a nuclear weapon at its beck and call whenever it wants to use it. You know, I'm of a firm belief that when Mohammed bin Salman first became defense minister and took the portfolio, one of the things he did was go to Islamabad and spend about $20 billion of Saudi money, $20 billion U.S., I think that was a contract with Islamabad with regard to, at that time, Iran possibly developing a nuclear weapon. Islamabad said to him, you will have 20. I don't know what the number is, but 20 is sort of military. Yeah, I'd want about 20. So 20 weapons will come your way instantly when Iran tests or you know Iran has a nuclear weapon. That's the agreement. Now it's been put in blood. I mean, you know, it is a defense pact now. I don't know if that's a portion of it, but I do know that my contacts tell me that it includes, if it's nuclear, we'll be with you. We'll be on your side. So we've got a whole new ball game, and it's not just Iran and Pakistan. It's also the fact that China is a supporter of Pakistan, but it's also a fact that China is really got vested interest in that Southern Railroad that comes up through Iran now. And it's also the fact that you have a rapprochement between these previous enemies, Iran and Riyadh and others in that complex. What does that mean in terms of what might happen to U.S. facilities in the region were Iran to feel like it had to attack them because it was first attacked by Israel and the United States? Would the Saudis even care about U.S. facilities being attacked as long as Iran only attacked them? No oil facilities involved, just U.S. facilities. We've already seen what happens when Qatar gets attacked by Israel. Would they just sit there if it were only U.S. facilities that were attacked? I mean, you could attack Al-Udeid and just attack the aircraft on the surface. You wouldn't have to do that much damage to the airfield. You could just wipe out the U.S. aircraft on the surface. And a surprise attack would pretty much do that. And it would be, I think it would be a surprise. I think this is not something that we would be expected by U.S. Central Command. Two can play at this game of duplicity. And it's about time that Persians used a little bit on the Arabs and on Israel. And I suspect that maybe the IRGC and the national military and maybe even the Guardian Council and the Majlis in particular, it's been pretty vituperative. It's been pretty warlike. Okay, we're in for a penny, in for a pound. We're going to take these bastards on. I wouldn't blame them a bit. I mean, the history is just too ripe with their being finally angry enough to do something to the great Satan. You're Iranian. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. 2 days ago, Larry, there was an interview with the head of the Security Council of the parliament in Iran, the former head of the Security Council. He's a long-term politician. He's a high-ranked politician. He knows everything about the defense. And he said that I don't understand why the government in Iran is so shy about talking about their capabilities, the military capabilities of Iran. I know that Iran has the power to bring any sort of war to Armageddon. They're so powerful. They know, because I know what's going on, considering the capabilities of Iranian army.
Right.
Why they're so shy to talk about it before happening? You know, it's so... You know, I look at it, it's so dangerous. Everything, in each and every way I see it's the conflict, it's so dangerous if they go to a full-out war against Iran.
Nima, if I were in charge of the military power of Iran right now, and this is no, I'm not Persian, I can't crawl into their heads, but if I were as a military professional in charge, I would unleash my entire capability minus what I thought I needed in case the United States did come in a big way, because I don't think they need all that to take care of Israel. And I would devastate Israel. I'd do it in. I'd just completely do it in. And I think it could happen in 48 hours. And then I would just announce, you want to fight United States? I've got a lot left, but I don't want to fight you. When Israel was burning and falling apart and collapsing, and God forbid that they should use a nuclear weapon in that scenario, but that's a different ballgame altogether. Then I would say to the United States, let's stop. We've gotten rid of the people we wanted to get rid of. You can go in and help them fix themselves, but I don't think you're going to be very fortunate in that regard because we really destroyed them. If you want to fight further, we will. But we'd prefer not to. That's how I'd do it. I'd wipe Israel out. Just wipe them out And then, and 48 hours, 96 hours is all it would take, maybe even less than that. And then after that fait accompli is visible to the United States, put it out there. We don't want to fight you. We don't want to fight you, but we will if we have to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it simultaneously. I know it would be more effective and more surprise, tactical and operational surprise, if they hit everything at once. But it would also detract from their ability to just wipe Israel out, because they'd have to devote some of their forces to the other targets. And it wouldn't give them any leverage against the United States. They would have considerable leverage if Israel were a smoking ruin, fait accompli, and they said to the United States, we don't want to have a fight with you. We've taken care of the enemy. The enemy was running rampant. It was killing Palestinians at a rate that was unfathomable. It was performing genocide. We did what the international court should have done. We did what the UN should have done. We did indeed what you should have done for you. Now, we don't want to fight with you over it. So let's stop. I mean, that's what I would do.
I believe that those, all of those Arab states would be more than happy if that happens from top to bottom. They're so afraid of talking, but you can feel it, how the population, the public opinion feel about Israel.
Yeah. It's happening in this country too, especially amongst those under 40. That's what got Charlie Kirk in trouble, because he recognized that from his vantage point, all the things he was doing that built up MAGA, that built up the young people in particular, that put the young people in Israel's camp and so forth. He realized all of that was taking steam out of his major movement, because there were so many young people questioning why this was happening with regard to Israel. And he tried in that long letter, which I read twice this morning, he tried in that long letter to tell Netanyahu in very, very guarded language, but you can see it in there. You can feel it in there, where he's telling him, you're losing these people. Therefore, you are losing the future. Well, that's happening across the board with Democratic youth, and it's happening to a certain extent with MAGA youth and Republican and conservative youth. And that's what Charlie was saying, and I think that's what got him killed. But they're not paying any attention to it. They're just doubling down. They're hiring more companies, building more public affairs campaigns, trying to capture more. Look at Larry Ellison and these jerks who are with him, Horowitz and the others, who are trying to get TikTok, trying to make sure that this slippage doesn't continue, that they get the high ground again for Israel. I think they've lost. I think they've lost. And the young people are the ones they're losing, and that's the future.
Donald Trump, two times he said that the problem, Russia is a paper tiger. Then he came out and said, no, I didn't mean that. And he again, you know, repeating the same sort of rhetoric that Russia is a paper tiger. Do you think that we are getting closer to a nuclear war with this sort of attitude? Because these countries don't know what is in the mind of Donald Trump.
I think Trump and the deep state have already decided on nuclear war, because last week we described all the economic reasons why Trump is desperate. He's desperate to maintain the U.S. and NATO control of the world, and it's all backfiring. Just in the last day or two, you've had Korea saying, we're not going to even begin to talk about investing in the United States. We can't afford it. It would mean a destruction of the Korean economy. The Japanese said, all right, we can't talk about that either. In Europe, even they're refusing to go along with it. So I think that Trump in the U.S. is saying, how are we going to lock in our control? Well, so you mentioned Ukraine. I think that the Europe is and Ukraine, now that they're bombing Russian refineries and bombing Russian energy generation, just like Russia had been bombing that of Ukraine. They're going to say, we're going to keep upping the scale until finally you won't have any choice but to resist. And your guests and the commentators all over the internet say that the Russian population and what's called the right wing, meaning the nationalistic wing, are saying, we've got to respond, because at some point we're going to have to respond, and we might as well respond earlier instead of later, after they've blown up more of our refineries and more of our energy production. So I think the point is coming very near, that especially now that Estonia has seized the Russian oil tanker, this means essentially one escalation after another. And I think they've decided on, we're going to keep upping the rate, destabilization until there's war, especially because the army believes and Trump believes that if they can tie up Russia in Ukraine, then Russia will be unable to help Iran defend it against what is a week or two away, Israel's attack and America's attack on Iran. Which is going to result in just the conflagration of the Near East. And I made a list that we talked about earlier of all the, you know, what America is trying to do to lock in its position, oil and the dollar. But it occurs to me that Trump and his advisors must know that none of these are going to work. And I think that Trump has his own agenda. And you and I talked about that earlier. His narcissistic drive to make himself famous. And I think he's seen there's one way in which he can be the most famous person in history. He can be the man who blew up civilization. That's more important than Jesus, more important than Moses. All he has to do is start an atomic war. And when the dust settles and evolution starts all over again, the surviving humanity, wherever it is going to write a history and say, how did all this begin? How did the world blow up? And they'll say, somebody named Donald Trump. That's his dream. A narcissist cannot resist the temptation to be the most important, famous person in all of history.
According to the Financial Press, we're on the precipice of a stagflationary period, a mixture of low-level economics, which the unemployment numbers I just mentioned reinforce, and an untamed inflation. The current inflation rate is 3%. If we are in a great struggle with China, let me let everyone know, the official inflation rate in China now is minus 0.4%. They don't have any inflation. They have a deflation. The United States has an inflation of 3%. That alone will enable the Chinese to outcompete the United States each year that it continues. Forget tariffs. Forget even exchange rates. Before you even look at those, look at the disparity. By the way, this is not new. The Chinese have not, in case you're not familiar with the statistics, it's not recent that they've had no inflation. They've kept inflation under control in a remarkable way. That's why you haven't heard about inflation in China, because it's not a bad number that the media can talk about. Keep that in mind when you read that in Russia is on its knees, its economy. If you cherry pick statistics in any country, including the United States, if I want to make a case, the United States is in good shape, I can pick six statistics that make that happen. If I want to show the United States is in trouble, I can pick six different statistics and make that case. Any analyst who has a brain knows that the trick of analysis is not the cherry picking, which an infant can do. It's the balancing. How do you reach a judgment that takes into account the different statistics, some of which are always pointing up and others of which are pointing down. Really is like a doctor measuring your body and all of its functions as well. All right, the Chinese are what? They're not just winning the economic race. It isn't enough anymore to simply say, look at the GDP. China and the BRICS now, a much larger economic unit than United States and the G7. And that's a real issue. But we're now beginning to see the chickens coming home. We're seeing the effects, the consequences. Over the last 25 years, the Chinese have made a series of very important investments in Venezuela. They are not in a position, neither in Venezuela nor in any of the other countries that they have invested, to permit the United States to willy-nilly overthrow a government in order then to what? Wipe out the Chinese? No, that isn't going to happen anymore. That's what used to happen in the old colonial world, yes, but not now. So when the United States, in violation of everything I understand to be the law, wantonly kills, I don't know, 25 people by now in several boats on the outskirts of Venezuela, no arrest, no investigation, no trial, no jury, no judge, no appeal, murder on the spot, with statements about Venezuela being punished for its drug activities. Everyone who knows anything about the drug trade knows that the bulk of the drug trade happens on the Pacific Ocean side of the Western Hemisphere, not on the Atlantic side. What comes from the Atlantic through the Caribbean is small potatoes. If you're interested in inhibiting drugs, Venezuela isn't your target. And so the Chinese, here we go now, the Chinese Navy is big time in Venezuela. What does that mean? It means exactly what you think it means. You're not going to do there. You can bravado all you want. You can assemble your generals in a sweaty room. Doesn't change. Is the United States, if Michael is right, is it about to work with Israel to attack Iran and Venezuela while the Gaza thing is unresolved and the Ukraine war is being won by Russia? Really? You know what that would be? Overreach. It would be exactly what brought to an end Hitler, Mussolini, and Francisco Franco. And I bet you, despite their clownishness, among Mr. Trump's advisors, there are those who may tell him that as well. And if not, well, we can do it.